It's been a long time. Long, long ago. Possibly in space. There could be dungeons. There could be dragons. There could be Koopa Troopas. But before we get into this week, month, years, special or regular ordinary based on your listening cycle episode of Deep Space and Dragons, I guess I should say I'm Richard.
And I am Carl, and I mean, like, yeah, it might seem like it's been a long time, but we're so far into deep space with our dragons that the time dilation has caused us to have just watched the Mario movie just now.
Man, that's great. Also, to, like, directly segue a story I told pre-recording, yeah, there's, like, a gravity fissure between us, so because we're aging at different rates from our relative space in the universe, Carl's gonna be, like, 80 by the time he comes back. Yet I'll still have a better credit score. So let's get into it.
Oh, harsh.
Harsh, but valid. So I'm feeling our main story tonight's going to be... Yeah, story, sure. Let's just be reporters today. Our main story tonight is going to follow King Koopa's invasion of New Donk City. But before we get into that, what is new in the world of Carlo?
Carlo. I like it.
Yeah, you don't get the S. So... You have to get at least under 5 minute run on the stage.
So, I mean, a little while ago, we were talking about how I was moving into a new place.
Yes. That episode's been banned in a couple countries. Disclaimer, it has not. Or has it? No one tells me these things.
Well, I mean, I did make some questionable statements that we worked through about living with people who have disabilities.
But let's not. Please continue.
But regardless of whether or not I deserve to be canceled, I did in fact move to a new house.
Cancel with a K. Continue.
So I know, like, I'm not sure what you're legally required to provide to make something a legal suite. I believe you have to have a fridge and a stove. Oh yeah, I think that just might be legislation before it becomes a legal suite.
I mean, thankfully we're in different provinces. So here, yes, but I definitely recall someone sold a house to a dear acquaintance of mine with a hypothetical basement suite where they had a fridge and a stove put there, but the outlet couldn't actually support them. And like, it could be a basement suite, and then they had to rewire all the electrical. So that implies that there's some truth to your statement. Because they tried to sell it on it being a hypothetical basement suite.
Okay. But microwaves are not... almost guaranteed a microwave is not a required appliance for something to be a legal suite.
I mean, a quick side note. The fact we've invented oven vent hoods that are also microwaves as a technology and they're not standard practice just shows capitalism didn't win. Because those are just better.
Well, hood vents also definitely not a requirement for something to be a legal suite. But then again, it's not a requirement for a house.
I'm pretty sure you do need oven ventilation to be a legal suite.
Because maybe Saskatchewan's too far behind. I don't know.
We'll get back to that. Please continue your story. I will just occasionally chime in if I think it's like a human rights violation. But other than that, I will not interrupt you.
Well, okay. But so the point of the story is that it's a four-bedroom duplex. Each half has four bedrooms, I assume. Our half definitely has four bedrooms, but had no microwave when we moved in.
Fair, fair. So far, no humanitarian issues. Continue.
Well, the whole point of my story here is that we had to go to a store to buy a new microwave. And, like, I'm not 100% certain, but I believe when you look in the box for microwave instructions on how to make food, they base their timing on a 1,000-watt microwave.
So far, I'm liking where this is going. Please continue, and I hope this doesn't end in a microwaved watermelon. I'm going to be slightly disappointed.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really... It's an extremely mundane story, actually. Because, I mean, the microwave we bought is good. I mean, maybe now, maybe I need to go microwave a watermelon. But the point of the matter is that it was surprisingly difficult to find a practically sized microwave that actually had 1,000 watts of power.
That is interesting. Is that the whole story? Is it just took a while to find a microwave?
Well, I mean, that is pretty much the whole story. It's like, you know, you look at, like, it's like the nice little small one. It's like, oh, that's only 700 watts. What's up with that? Then, like, the next size up, it's like, well, that one's 900 watts, but why is it not 1,000? And then
round numbers,
like,
are important. Like, do you really want to know?
The next size up is, the next size up is, like, probably twice as big as the first size we look at. And it's 1,100 watts, and it's like, okay, fine, we'll just get this one, because firstly, these boxes are so hard to read, because they don't seem to advertise microwaves based on wattage. They seem to advertise them based on how many cubic feet they are, which is also odd, because we're Canadian with the metric system, but I guess they must be manufactured in America, or, well, yeah, America. Where else even uses feet and,
Saudi
and
Arabia.
Miles and stuff? Saudi Arabia, ooh. I could have a Saudi Arabian microwave.
And I think Jordan. But anywho, note, I'm not actually certain about this, but I feel like that was one of them. So, to loop back around, microwave built into the hood vent fixes the space issue. Like, we've solved this problem. This is a solved problem.
It sure is. Well, except for in the, you know, occasional house or suite that does not have a hood vent over the stove,
which yet again feel like poisoning yourself, but you're Carl, you have high constitution, you'll be fine.
Yeah, you just open a window and grab a fan, you'll be fine.
I mean, I've absolutely most definitely called the labor board on a redacted movie theater for using a redacted oven, and the redacted inspector saying this is giving off carbon monoxide, and they're like, well, no one's died yet, so it's fine.
Well, okay, but I mean, like, commercial oven, or yeah, a commercial oven that's running constantly does just give off more fumes and stuff, where it's like a stove or an oven in a home. I mean, you could be in a dangerous place where you're giving off carbon monoxide, but I just think that the requirements for residential appliances are a little bit more relaxed because they're less likely to be used constantly.
It makes sense. I just really thought the hood vent was a requirement. But that could be one of those, like, different province things where Ontario's like, you need a hood vent, and you're not allowed straws made out of dead dinosaurs, but the cup's still plastic.
Well, that one's a Canada-wide thing, aside from bending straws. And,
you know,
and by December of 2023, single-use plastics will be illegal to sell in Canada too. So,
you know what? Also, fight our climate change faster. We just ban Trudeau from flying on a private jet, and that would actually offset the same amount of carbon as all of Canada using plastic straws.
Ooh, we need him to have him travel using a quantum state teleporter.
No, he could just zoom like the rest of us.
I really wanted to use the quantum state teleporter. And then you accidentally connect the wrong wire here and the wrong wire there, and suddenly they show up as a pile of goo.
Yeah, but to be fair, on our podcast, we're not allowed to talk about hypothetical deaths of political figures.
Oh, yeah, it's just any particular political figure. It's just, you know.
If his name was on the ballot, King Koopa, voiced by Jack Black, is who I'd vote for. So, let's move into today's main topic, the Mario movie.
Yes, the Mario movie. The Super Mario Bros. Movie.
So, spoilers. First off, we're talking the current Mario Bros. Movie, not the fantastic live-action movie. So, spoilers for this movie, if you haven't seen it yet. Watch every other episode of Deep Space and Dragons, and enough time will have passed that you'll have been spoiled by the internet. Also, I don't think anything in the plot being spoiled really takes away from the movie that much, because it's mostly just eye candy. It is literally, when you take, like, a fruit roll-up, right? And you're like, you know what this fruit roll-up needs? Jelly beans. And you make yourself like a fruit roll-up burrito to hold your jelly beans? It's that kind of movie. Nothing that's really good for you, but it's delicious.
Well, okay. So I kind of have a little bit of a side tangent, and I'm going to throw some shade. So I don't know if you've heard anything about the new, I think it's, on HBO.
Oh, no.
Anyway, it's Velma. Velma, the
yeah,
animated
no,
series.
I hate every...
Well, okay, so how does this relate to the Mario movie?
In no way that's going to be good, but please, you are my best friend and I'm allowing this to happen. But I want you to know that next natural 20 that hits your character is because of whatever you're about to say.
Well, no, so an observation that I've made is like a lot of older shows and longer running franchises are being reinvented for the modern era, as they would say.
Yeah, because new using established intellectual property reduces consumer risk, causing better banking loans, baby. Shout out to Ryan George for being awesome, but please continue.
I kind of feel like because these reboots and remakes are primarily financially motivated.
Yeah.
that the people who created the original product, the people who actually have the passion and the vision and the inspiration, are either gone or not allowed to work on the new version of the product. And so you end up with people who they have ideas and they're not confident enough about their ideas to pitch them and have them be made into something new, but they don't have passion for the original IP that they're rebranding.
Oh, yeah.
And Velma being like one of the biggest points where it's like they care so little about Scooby-Doo that they didn't even include Scooby-Doo in their Scooby-Doo remake.
Like, Velma's a fascinating creature because they like... It's basically like it was engineered to be hate watched to get those viewership numbers from people hate watching it when it came out. Like, they went out of their way to make an aggressively bad show.
Well, so Velma is one of the worst examples. She-Hulk is another pretty bad example where the people who were creating it just didn't have the passion for the original product, and they just kind of made their own show that wasn't very good.
She-Hulk's a bit more interesting, though. You see, to give Marvel some slack, first off, I did not enjoy She-Hulk. I have not enjoyed any of their live-action TV shows. Hawkeye was a decent Christmas special. Somehow Netflix was better at being Marvel than having the entire cinematic might of Marvel to back you.
Okay.
So, like, most of their shows are like, this is a movie that you added 30 minutes of... I don't know. You just looked at the 10 most recent newspapers and just added them in. This one's about, well, how can we make this longer? Let's make Hawkeye learn sign language. Okay. And I think Russia's up to no good. Let's add that in there. So... disregarding my hatred of Disney serialized streaming shows,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you had a point somewhere. But at this point, literally, you made it through the entire timer. You know there's people who have beaten the original Mario Bros. Before you got to this point. Like, I think the speedrun clock for original Mario Bros. Is...
Okay, well, regardless of what this original speedrunning clock is, this actually segues to the Mario movie, because the number one thing, which I absolutely love about
the
movie...
4 minutes, 58 seconds, and we're at 13 minutes. Just wanted to clarify, you could beat Super Mario Bros. Original game twice. Please continue.
the one thing that I absolutely loved about the Mario movie is that it is very, very clearly made by people who are extremely passionate about the original product.
Yes.
And it is a tribute of the highest caliber to 35 years of Mario games.
So what I really loved about it is when it comes to adaptation, and I see a lot of shows to throw shade at Netflix, for example, Netflix Cowboy Bebop, or even Velma's a surprisingly apt example, is they try and take a storyline, like a single chunk of it, and then rework it into something. So they like have like a checklist of things the original did that was iconic, and then they put random crap in the middle. So they're like, okay, for Velma, we need to have a mystery machine. Cool. And then they made fun of the mystery machine. But they didn't ask why the mystery machine. So when it comes to Cowboy Bebop, they're like, okay, we took all these random standalone episodes and mashed them together into an incoherent mess of a story. What the Mario movie did is it was inspired by it, but it didn't try to be any one Mario game or Mario manga story or take key Mario cinematic moments. Because none of the scenes in that movie existed in Mario canon. Instead, they were homages that were carefully submitted. Like, it wasn't just Bowser rolls up in his clown car and throws bombs. Nah, clown cars were just a thing because they're cool. Like, it would have been too easy for Mario to spin Bowser by his tail and say, "So long, redacted Bowser," and throw him off a ledge. But they wanted to remix it to the highest quality of not actually knowing where that movie was going.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
Just like my weird takeaway was like, oh, I really like how you didn't shove all the things we already knew together and call it a day.
Well, so like I really did enjoy the Mario movie. And like it had more Easter eggs than the Easter Bunny. Like it was
so Blue Shell Koopa, just to stop everything. I did not think this movie was going to go so hard. So you're like, okay, kids, animated movie. I want to explain something here that happened in this movie. And I'm going to tell you that this belonged a little more in Fast and the Furious. A person's car crashes. He throws his jacket off the ground, reveals wings, or maybe a jetpack if it's a Fast and Movie movie, puts a bunch of grenades on his chest, pulls the pin, yells his name, and then flies directly at Mario to kill him. Blue Shell was never seen again in that movie. Blue Shell's dead, Carl. Blue Shell was giving his life for the family. Also, a prop from a racing game became my favorite character in a cinematic movie. Because, yeah, every time I'm going to throw a Blue Shell for the rest of my life, that scene's going to play in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
A single tear is going to form at the corner of my eye. Because he went so hard. He was a licenseless rider of Koopas.
Licenseless rider. What I really, really liked about the show, about the Mario movie, is that, like you say, it was a very... it was definitely made by people... or overseen by people with an extreme passion for Mario and the IP. And so that is like, visually, there's just so many Easter eggs. Musically, there's a lot of Easter eggs and just like little notes from all the different games.
Complete misplay to use real world music in this movie. What are you doing? You literally have Koji Kondo. What are you doing with your life?
I think that was...
Get No Rest to Brooklyn out of there. You literally have the Clock Town theme.
I feel like that was more the influence of Illumination, which is where my praise for the Mario movie actually kind of like. I would recommend going and watching it if you are a fan of Mario, and if you've played any Mario game in the past 35 years, there's going to be at least one reference or Easter egg for you.
They
and
had
if you
the
play
car
multiple,
making
then
menu happen in the movie, and it actually like. Blew my mind that they had the little wheels they were spinning to build their carts, because apparently the Kong Kingdom's primary export is combat go-karts, which makes sense. That was the main thing, is they did random things in that movie that weirdly made more sense than they should have.
Well, I definitely agree that it was very interesting, and I would say that they strung their Easter eggs together relatively cohesively, and it was a fun show to watch.
Also, go ahead.
Well, Illumination, it's the same studio that has graced us with the Minions movie.
Meh.
And the Minions Rise of Gru movie.
Meh.
And I have a question for you there, Richard. I need a catchy like hashtag for kids movies for kids.
Hashtag Minions.
That's gonna attract you the wrong kind of attention, I think. But the Illumination's movies are visually very appealing, but the Mario movie included, the all the characters are very flat and lifeless, except for Bowser. Bowser was amazing.
Jack Black decided that his life depended on this. It's like, so we all know the story that Jack Black sunk into a magic oil drum to make a pact with the devil to then fight his way through the pick of destiny to become a musical legend. And this was his payment. This was what he had to do, is one day he had to become Bowser. That was the deal. And he paid in full.
But the movies I mentioned, Minions, Rise of Gru, and Super Mario Movie, I have a really hard time figuring out what their themes are for the movies, besides just being, let's make some money. And then at the end of the movie, I kind of felt like nothing that happened in the movie actually mattered in terms of the story.
So, to counteract a bit, because if we're going to try and critically acclaim it, I mean, part of why this movie did really well is its competition was the other Super Mario movie, which...
which was not made by people who were passionate about Mario.
They didn't know it was a video game character. Two of the actors, the Mario and Luigi, didn't know that they were playing video game characters. So I pulled up a list of Illumination to give us such classics as Despicable Me, which wasn't that good. The Lorax, Secret Life
Despicable
of Pets.
Despicable Me was very cute.
Despicable Me wasn't bad, but yeah, like it's true. This is probably their most mature movie, ironically.
Because
you know, a lot of things straight up died, like the nihilistic Luma Star. Because I think what happened is someone probably said to them, we're making this movie for 32-year-old men.
Mm.
And women. Mm-hmm. Pretty good gender spectrum across this movie. So that means that they gotta have random acts of Koopa violence.
Mm.
A lot of people died in that movie.
Okay, so Illumination...
Worse, a mustache got pulled off. Ugh.
So, Despicable Me, The Lorax, which was an adequate adaptation of the book, but not.
If you're doing
really
The Lorax and The Grinch, what do you like? That's the thing about Illumination is a lot of these things they've done were very specifically designed to be for that target audience. Like they were clearly making the next generation of the Land Before Time movies.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not their fault because, like. They kicked this one into 11th gear. So when it comes to the themes of this one, like, the theming really depends who you consider the protagonist to be. So Mario's whole thing was, I started my own business, I just have to go, even though the entire world tells me it's a bad idea, the most important thing I can do is try, and it'll make a difference. And that's how I get away with happy with me and my brother. And Luigi Zark was like, oh, well, I need to stand up for my brother, he can't bail me out all the time, even though that's exactly what happened in this movie. But Bowser's arc. Bowser first wanted to conquer the world so he could have his fairy tale wedding. Bowser's thing was about love and rejection. Heartache, trauma, how might will never win the day. Oof. I don't know if Bowser changed by the end of that movie, but man.
Bowser, like I say, Bowser was Bowser should have been the protagonist because he had the most depth and nuance to his character. Every other character, like they were so.
And it was the little details of Bowser too. Like he's trying to be the generic bad guy, but like every other dialogue was like Mario is united with the Kongs, and did Peach think that was cool? Like his priorities stayed consistently on point, like the creep. I am shocked they leaned into him wanting his fairy tale romance. Because there's a lot of fan theories where it's like, yeah, Bowser's trying to capture Peach because she has magic powers. So it's like, nah. Lizard has a crush. That is the entire plot of this. Do not change it into something weird, okay?
But so, it's like another theme you might consider to actually be a through line for the movie would be...
Are you about to say the performance-enhancing jug solve your problems?
No. I mean, Ryan George is probably right that that's got to be the third theme. But yeah. But the theme I go with is for some reason,
merchandise.
They really want people to earn the respect of their fathers.
You know,
because so like Mario, he gets like slapped in the face by his dad, like, you're just bringing your brother down with you. And then he goes and he saves the world. And then Donkey Kong is like, oh, yeah, my dad thinks I'm a joke. And then Mario's like, well, my dad thinks I'm a joke, too. And
so I think everything the animators are projecting a bit that they got their degrees in animation and are now making a Mario movie, the first big serious thing. It's like, look at me now. I made Mario. Yeah, Dad, what? Yeah, no, I think the entire studio agreed that that was their message. We're big time now. You laughed at us when we split off from Universal Animation and made our own studio. But we got Mario now. You're like, ooh, Minions and Lorax. Nah, we got King Koop. We got Jack Black. Yeah, what?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, that does hypothetically feed into the stunt casting. Although, on that note...
they got one good actor. Actually, Charlie Day was kind of born to play this.
Charlie Day was kind of born to play this. And
also,
I don't know,
there's a fun
Chris
side
Pratt...
effect. So, mm-hmm. Chris Pratt and Charlie Day and Peach all use their actual voices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
However, as a fun side effect, YouTube is now full of clips from their extremely not PG shows synced up perfectly with Mario scenes. Because you can just take all these Saudi and Philadelphia lines and make them come out of Luigi's mouth. So, you can have Luigi mention, like, did you put LSD in my water while he's in the cage looking at the Luma star? So there is an upside to this.
Or talking about the spike bat that they used to kill rats at the Always Sunny in Philadelphia bar.
Yeah. So, there is some upside.
What I was going to say, actually, a little bit of a segue away from maybe a little bit more praise for Mario, the Mario movie.
I mean, we started by saying it's good. It's pretty good praise. Like,
not necessarily praise per se, but like...
For me, that's pretty blatant praise. The things I love the most, I'll, like, tear to shreds. Like, you've heard me talk about Bleach.
Enough.
I read all of Bleach. I watched it all, like, three times. Stupid insert sword backstory nonsense.
The casting of Chris Pratt as Mario, I don't know if he was necessarily the best choice
he
for
wasn't.
The role. But when people will say, well, why didn't they hire the guy that does Mario as voice acting already? I really have to wonder, like, how much voice acting does that guy actually do? Because Mario hardly talks. Like, so, I feel like they probably couldn't have actually cast that guy because he wouldn't be able to have a conversation with other voice actors and make it sound convincing.
So, it's kind of funny. So, I was talking with my friend after we saw the Mario movie about the Smash Bros. Cinematic Universe, because that's a conversation you have, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think the best joke in the world is they need to do a Legend of Zelda movie and cast literally the highest profile, whoever the most expensive actor in is the world right now, and only goes, yeah, for Link. The best joke in the world would be casting, like, let's see, most expensive
like
actor.
Robert Downey Jr., he's probably pretty expensive. George Clooney, that'd be pretty funny too.
Most expensive actor in the world right now is Tom Cruise.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
So,
well, as long as they do have a scene of Zelda or Link running, I think Tom Cruise will voice act the crap out of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It just rolls. Although, okay, we were talking that, like, the Zelda movie's so obvious, it'd be one of the less interesting ones. Now, what we need is a flashback. Like, the next movie, since they already have the character models for it, needs to be Baby Mario and Yoshi, and have that somehow be Princess Peach's backstory to being in the kingdom? Like, yeah.
Well, so just as another interesting side note about Easter eggs, Mario has an R-Wing from Star Fox in his bedroom.
As he should.
And he has a poster from F-Zero in his bedroom.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if they have it backwards or not, but the film theorists, they did a mini theory episode about it, about how since those objects appear in universe, it's likely that those are games that actually exist, and like video games that actually exist, and so those characters are probably not going to have their own movie. So here's why
they're wrong. They're just wrong, full stop. Three things. First, there's a Jumpman arcade game that was literally Mario and Donkey Kong in the bar.
Well, except that it was a Yeti and a different colored Mario.
My point being, that is, there's a magic multiverse portal.
I mean, that's true. So, just saying that Mario himself is a real person, so that can't possibly have been Mario as Jumpman.
But I'm saying that, so Mario goes through this pipe, right? And then sees Fox McCloud. He's like, I know you from the video game. He's like, what are you talking about, idiot? Perfect, done.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, like, we can't do this because they Easter egged it. Also, Marvel was also bad for putting in Easter eggs and then, like, having to redo them later, like how the Infinity Gauntlet was in Thor 1 and they just called it a fake prop later. Like, they could even go super crazy with it. And the Star Fox video game could have been from when Fox McCloud stopped on Earth on his space journey 50 years ago and met the creator.
Maybe.
So there's a lot they could do. Like, to be like, they can't do this because of this. I'm like, nah. Don't compromise my creativity.
I'm not saying that they can't do this. I'm just saying that it, given the level of passion that they put into the movie for people, for fans of Mario, it's likely that anyone that didn't get directly referenced might actually have their own movie, like Samus or Star Fox.
So, I mean, clearly we or need Zelda. Danny DeVito as Wario to happen. Like, that's just obvious.
Danny DeVito as Wario.
Like, is that not just the obvious thing that happens? Like,
Danny DeVito would crush it as Wario, that's for sure.
Like, also, it's one of those things where there's a lot of obvious, hey, sequels, infinite money, but they could also just not. They could just be done.
That's true. Or maybe they'll find a different studio that's actually willing to write a more compelling story. I don't know.
I mean, the thing is, the story did everything it could. I'm giving that movie a weird pass because it was a spectacle movie where it's like, okay, imagine you will. You're in my office and I show you all these Mario props and I say, write a movie that has every one of these toys in it.
Mm.
And it's like, how am I supposed to put the fire bars in the blocks? And then they do. They put in the question mark blocks. They put in Mario running through an obstacle course to grab a flagpole. They canonized Rainbow Road in this movie. So they were given a truly impossible task. It's like, okay, cool, we're just going to actually have Cat Mario be a thing and have him fight Donkey Kong so we can have the one scene where he's on the girder throwing barrels down. They managed to write in Mario and Donkey Kong riding away on a rocket barrel and not break their own continuity. The amount of things they managed to do in this movie without breaking continuity is truly impressive. Because that was kind of my main thing I was watching for is, okay, sure, you didn't tell a space opera. Yeah, sure, this mobile game I've been playing lately actually has better writing. But to successfully put in that many Easter eggs and have none of them conflict with the story. Like, the penguins. Like, okay, we need a penguin castle to have the cute penguins for Mario 64 in the movie. Sure, I'll just have Bowser burn down the penguin castle and make sure there's a power star for the power star. Also, can you make sure to put his wedding tuxedo in there? Why not? So for the amount of Mario per square foot, the fact it had a coherent plot at all is a miracle, and we should praise them. They managed to have the Yoshi Stampede Ultimate Smash Attack go in the background and not ruin the narrative flow.
I'm just saying,
they fit Diddy Kong in that movie.
This movie is really, really close to the line of being a kids movie for kids, and it's only the
Lumistar
sheer amount of Mario per square foot, as you say, that brings it above that.
And the amount of Koopa death. There's three things that make it work for adults: the sheer number of Koopa troopers that die horrible deaths.
Hmm.
Like, literally, you see one crawl into lava, come back as a skeleton, then get smashed into dust.
Right.
The fact that Bowser's goal is literally burn down a nation to hook up with a princess is just innately funny to an adult. The Bowser right. swooning over a piano for how much he crushes on Peach is not funny to a kid. That is funny to a heartbroken adult who's been like, I've been there, Bowser.
I'm just saying, that's why I want to create some sort of hashtag that we can just, whenever we watch a movie and we're like, this is a kids' movies for kids, we can just create a hashtag and then eventually with our German audience 18. Spreading it to the world.
Hmm? PG minus 13.
PG minus 13.
Or PG less than 13. I like PG less than 13 a little more. So it's just an age rating, PG less than 13. And we shall discuss it as such. If you're over 13, you are not the target audience for this. Like 101-year-olds should not be playing with Lego. They could hurt themselves. But yeah, like, I enjoyed that movie. Although, I do have a super specific quip that bugs me slightly.
Okay.
Ready for the most weirdly petty quip ever?
Okay.
So first, they showed an overworld map, but didn't actually put all the, like, worlds from any Mario game in it.
Okay.
Which I'm like, okay, you're literally only showing the places that he montages through, sure. But they had them go through Yoshi's Island with a stampede of Yoshis in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Then they showed the Yoshi egg at the wedding like it was a big plot twist. And then the Yoshi in New York like it's a big plot twist. But you showed us the Yoshis already. Why is your cliffhanger a Yoshi if you already showed us the Yoshis? That would have been such a stronger scene if all we saw of Yoshi was the egg. Like, that's just, like, a weird choice. It's kind of like when they showed, like, Evil Ray with, like, the double-ended lightsaber. And it's like, that would be really cool. Too bad you didn't do anything with it.
Mm.
So that's my weirdly specific. It's like, I love Yoshis. But that Easter egg would have been much stronger as a post-credit if they didn't already show me there's just an island full of Yoshis that's Yoshi Island that I'm very familiar with, and then showed Yoshi stampeding and Yoshi Island frolicking. Now, what would have been like a ridiculous Easter egg at the end if it showed King K. Rool stealing Donkey Kong's hoard of bananas while he was gone? That would have been a post-credit.
King K. Rool stealing the hoard of bananas?
Because that's how Donkey Kong Country starts, right? So, like, you literally, the post-credit is just, like, a crocodile with bags looting from, like, and it just says DK's hoard. Like, it shows his house and the treasury under it, and they're just looting his bananas. That would have been an amazing ending. Because DK wasn't there to protect it, because he was busy declaring war.
That would be pretty funny. And then it would maybe like a rivalry between Mario and DK, because DK would blame Mario for letting his bananas get stolen. And...
Right? Oh man, did Seth Rogen call it in? Like, I know he's a better actor than that.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know why, but like, it's just... So, Luigi was convincing as Luigi.
Hmm.
He even did the, Mario... Chris Pratt was literally the, like, blandest vanilla white bed bologna sandwich human being you could find, sure. You literally just, what, showed people faces? It's like, I don't know who that is, but are they famous? To find your Mario? Sure. And then
I would say Chris Pratt didn't do a terrible job, but he didn't do an amazing job either.
Well, one thing we established is this movie was just a vehicle for references, right?
Mm.
Which means he didn't actually have any dialogue. Not really. He would, because the movie was actually surprisingly light on exposition. Welcome to the Mushroom Kingdom. It's full of mushroom people. Deal with it. Get on the platform. Let's go, go, go. Run the obstacle course. Mm. Do it. So you didn't get to a motor act because, like, the movie came through like a brick of dynamite and didn't slow down. Which is fine design, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have a chance to do it bad. What line could he mess up? Let's go? They could just fix that in post.
Okay.
And then Peach, there's like, we're just going to make Peach the most girl boss of girl bosses. I'm like, yeah, that's actually weirdly fair. Like, the better, it's like, how are you so good at this obstacle course? I lived in this world. Oh, the one with, like, springboards wherever you walk and there's just floating blocks in the air? Yeah, you would be good at this. Also, they kind of recon... I know we're getting near where the end of our episode would be, but I need to talk about how much I love this slight recharacterization of Peach.
Okay.
So, in the Mushroom Kingdom, in, like... quote-unquote lore, even though Super Mario Bros. 3 was technically a stage play, this whole thing, is like, yeah, there was kings and Peach was a daughter. But no, in this Mushroom Kingdom, this is a Game of Thrones thing. Peach is the princess of the Mushroom Kingdom because they declared herself because she was the apex predator of that nation. She is princess because she is by far the deadliest person in the Mushroom Kingdom.
She is the deadliest person in the Mushroom Kingdom.
So it's like, instead of like, oh, I'm a princess and I happen to be badass. No, you're the princess because you're badass. And I'm like, yeah, no, I see what happened here. Person shows up, learns they can touch flowers to draw forth fire, blasts some of these horrifying death plants, carves out a village for their people. Yeah, no, you literally just rolled in as a literal messiah. Here you are planning war tactics. And it's like, well, why are they wearing a dress? Like, that's a combat dress. Did you not see the floating? No, this is tactical. That dress is plate mail, probably.
Probably.
So, like, yeah, no, like, I'm fine with Peach being a badass if the narrative justification is that is why she's in charge. Yeah, no, that makes sense. If I was a 3-foot tall mushroom person, I'd put Peach in charge. Peach ran into battle with a spear.
Peach did run into battle with a spear and a hidden ice flower in her bouquet.
So this movie didn't have plot twists, but the rampage was surprisingly awesome. Like, sometimes you just want to watch stuff explode.
Well, yeah, so I'm like, as much as I've kind of dumped on it for not having much of a plot or very deep and
Bowser carried that complex movie so characters. Hard.
If you love Mario, it's a really good movie. And it's a very beautiful movie and it's a lot of fun to watch. Like I don't think it's a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a definite tribute to Mario. And it was a lot of fun to watch with interesting characterizations of some of the characters anyway.
Yeah. I will happily give it 5 out of 5 power stars or 52 stars in Peach Castle. Simply because they were giving an impossible task and gave me a good movie. Because there's no way, like I was saying, for you to make... Like, they loved everything about Mario when they made this movie. Like, they managed to tell a completely original story, which blew my mind that they didn't just literally have Bowser capture Peach and him go through 4 worlds to save her. Like, it's... Or literally, like, oh, let's just reuse the plot of Super Mario 64. Like, there's a lot they could have done to just, like... phone it in, but no, they wrote a movie. They were willing to change. They took more risks than I thought they would. You know how Boruto is terrible for millions of reasons, including that they literally can't get rid of existing characters because they sell merchandise. Yeah, this Mario movie is like, you know what, we're just gonna like completely recontextualize these characters and we don't care about canon. Cranky Kong was never DK's dad, but you don't see nerds on the internet losing their mind over it. That's hard to do. You know how hard it is to write a Mario movie that nerds don't get mad at you for?
I do have respect for the writers and animators of the show, of the movie, too. Like, it's just...
Because, you know, most of these episodes, I'm like, yeah, I could probably write a better one. I could not write a better Mario movie, because that's just an impossible task.
Yeah, that's fair. For all my gripes, I don't think... I have zero confidence that I'd be able to make a better movie. Especially one that paid such obvious tribute to the source material, unlike some of the shows that we've mentioned on this podcast already.
Like,
here,
one thing it made me want to do is it kind of made me reevaluate Sonic the Hedgehog, one of my favorite video game adaptations. Be like, man, you could have done so much more if you just gave up and CGI'd that whole thing and made a full length movie with it. Because it's like that Sonic movie gained nothing from having these characters be live action, but that's the way to make your movie more serious.
Well, I mean, the Sonic movie also is actually quite a good video game adaptation.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, I'm not sure what's going to turn out after like the hype dies down for which one I think was better, but Blue Shell Man will live in my brain till the day I die. And with that, we move into the random question of this podcast episode. Ding! You know what used to be random question of the week? I had so much faith in us. We were so young then. So optimistic.
All right, what's a random question today?
Wow, a random question is mean given the current world we live in. What do you think about artificial intelligence?
That is a very open-ended question. Holy,
should I like look through the hat and find a different one? Because I'm like, I've given a full hour presentation of ChatGPT this week. Like, I have thoughts, but man, for end of episode one.
I think that artificial intelligence is definitely something that see, well, one of the things that I've heard is not necessarily that we need to worry about artificial intelligence going rogue or whatever, but more so that we need to worry about artificial intelligence being too competent and then achieving its goals regardless of whether or not humanity profits from the goals of the AI.
Like, to go a little less Skynet with it from my stance on it, because ChatGPT, DALL-E 2, all these are real things. So on one hand, I'm a writer. Therefore, I should be terrified of a device that writes for people. On the other hand, right now, there's a very serious risk that becoming a trained professional who uses AI-assisted tools in white-collar jobs such as lawyer, doctor, office drone, the ones who use the technology will replace the ones who don't. But there's a certain fundamental irony that we're currently automating things right now and trying to automize jobs, this, that. And I don't know how bad I feel about lawyers being automized out, accountants being automized out, like the previous super high-skill jobs getting phased out for tools, and then everyone then having to make sandwiches is kind of funny to me.
Well, I mean, I'm not really necessarily that worried about this Skynet ending. I'm just, it's like, right now, like, AI is impressive, but we're
it's
not even
really
dumb. At a general AI that can actually, like, achieve numerous tasks. It's like, it's the AIs are mostly specialized. They're very, very good at one thing. And then, like, we, the things that they're good at, like, the AI will improve the quality of life over the next couple of years here, for sure. When, you know, doctors, lawyers, and all those kinds of people being able to more quickly parse their information to more accurately assess problems.
Yeah, like, could you imagine
whatnot.
A student in finance office that answers an email within a reasonable time frame?
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, like, I think AI is going to be good, just then eventually, if we create AI that's too competent at its own task and then it just chugs away at it regardless of what we want it to do, because it wasn't designed to do what we want it to do, it was designed to do what it does.
Also, some things I've noticed when playing around with AI, because I mentioned before I've been using ChatGPT and things to play around with making D&D content, because, like, you know, do the math. It's good at telling it to do the math. But ChatGPT is the most confident liar you'll ever see, where you'll ask it for a fact, and it will just lie to you. And then you'll say, you lied to me, and they'll be like, I'm sorry, here's the true data, and then lie to you again. Because, like, a while back, I'm like, write me a character sheet for Mario from the Mario movie. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, writes a character sheet, is like, here's what Mario would look like as a plumber monk. And I'm like, rewrite it only using Adventure League content. Here's Mario as a Path of Radiance monk. And they just had, like, a feat for throwing hammers. I'm like, that's not a thing in D&D. It's like, okay, let me rewrite it. And then just kept the things the same. And I'm like, that's just incorrect. Do you know what Adventure League legal means? Yes. Is this Adventure League legal? Yes. You lied to me. I'm sorry. Here's a corrected one. Gives the same thing. So I really think its ability to amplify humanity's innate stupidity by using a fact checker that's trained by you to think you're as smart as you will actually just cause it to self-destruct and destroy things. It's like, this is a great plan for law firms until someone loses $1 billion because the AI told the person he was smart. And with that, thank you everybody for tuning in to Deep Space and Dragons. Yeah, I don't really have anything to plug. Like, I have books for sale, but they can just click the link tree. Although someone bought a book on Lulu Press the other day. I'm like, wait, really? I got $6. I'm like, I never thought anyone would buy this, and my second book's not even on there.
Huh. Well, I guess you better put it on there.
Yeah, that's on my to-do list this week. It's like not even like the nice cover art. It's like the one I made using silhouettes and Inkscape with gumption.
Wait, not even like the carved soapstone? Art?
No, I went with one I made in Inkscape after the soapstone. The soapstone just kind of
I remember that one now. I think I have an edition with the silhouette art.
It wasn't bad.
I, I don't think I have an edition with the chibi art, though. Or at least not the first verse book, anyway.
Now, do you even love me?
What? I'm sorry I didn't buy three copies of your book, one for each different card of cover art.
I'll tell you what, when I make it big, when the trilogy's box set, I'll just shout and send you the nice box set with unified artwork. It'll be great.
Yeah,
actually,
right.
I really kind of want to, like, commission more artwork from my artist, just to kind of sneak it through, like, in my first book to have more sketches, because my artist is awesome and it makes me happy. Like, if I won the lottery, it would all just go to me commissioning artwork for things.
But yeah, so, you know, the support us on Patreon, or however you want to support us. Or don't support us, because, I mean, we're supporting ourselves, so, you know.
I mean, I like support. Bye.
Bye.
I just give a full tangent. Like, yeah, no, but seriously. Book 2 is doing pretty good, and then over the summer I might finish my Cyberpunk book. I have too many projects I can pick from over the summer, which is why I'm taking this week off from projects.
Makes sense.